Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Thursday, May 21st, 2020. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adioye Jr. Joining me is a man Snyder cut from a different cloth, Greg Miller.
Hey, Blessing, how are you? It's brand. You woke up in a brave new world. You know what I mean?
I did.
Everything's looking up now. Don't worry about it.
Woke up all of a sudden, everything changed. Everything's different now.
You know, dreams
Snyder
can come true.
It's being released.
I think for
how do you
too
feel
long.
Today?
I feel great. I mean, yesterday I was on cloud nine. You know what I mean? Nothing could bring me down. And today I woke up same way. Can't believe this is happening. Can't believe this is the reality we live in. But here we are, Blessing. The Snyder Cut's real. 4 hours and or a 6-part miniseries. That's what it's all about. $20 million to finish this film. Let's go.
How much of a hand personally do you think you had in this happening? Because I feel like, and of course, I'm in your circle. And so you're the one I hear yelling about it the most.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily see anybody else yelling about it aside from the actors. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, how much of a hand in this do you think you personally had?
I mean, credit where credit's due, honestly, dropping any joking stuff. Like, I didn't have much to do with this at all. Like, I think maybe I'm the most vocal video game person about it or whatever. And like in your world, obviously, because you have to work with me every day. But the actual hashtag release the Snyder Cut, people that were raising money for suicide prevention, putting out T-shirts, flying planes over Comic-Con, putting up billboards at Comic-Con, that kind of stuff. Like, there were people out there doing real work. There were a bunch of people being assholes as well. But welcome to the internet. Where right now I can say, I love the color green. And everybody's like, I love green too. So I'm going to fuck people who say blue, they like blue. I'm going to go kill. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, ugh.
Yeah. Now,
but all
Kevin,
in all, we did it.
Fuck
question
blue.
For you. What's going on with the background for the show? This is KFGD, right?
Yeah, it is.
This is in a surprise games cast that we're recording right now.
We're on fire though. It kind of looks cool.
What's up, everybody? I'm Tim Geddes. This is Greg Miller. This is the coolest student video games, Greg Miller. Welcome to Gamescast. Oh, there it is. Now we're
getting
we're
back on track. We're back on track.
Greg, I want to issue to you an apology. This
Thank
has happened
you.
Two nights in a row now where I get hit up for Predator. You know, we get to play with Nick Scarpino, do the whole thing, right?
Want some candy?
Somehow, two nights in a row, I've fallen asleep at 10 p.m.
Right,
Pacific time. And I don't
the
know
first
what's
night
going
wasn't
on.
Wasn't that bad. The first night when you did it, there was a big gap. You know what I mean? Where it was like, hey, do you want to do this tonight or whatever? And then you didn't respond. It was like, no big deal. Last night was the weird one. Where Nick hit us up and like, hey, do you guys want to play Predator? And before I even responded, you responded like, oh, I also hear you did this thing. And then I was like, all right, how's 10:30? And everybody seemed game. And then we got on at 10 and we texted the thread. No response from you. We ran and made fun of Snowbike Mike and Andy. And then we got Fran. And then eventually Andy came. I called you. I left you a voicemail. Like there was a I for a second.
Yeah,
I was like,
I woke up to so many notifications and I was like, oh, fuck. What happened?
So I didn't make the cut, huh?
Hey, we learned our lesson with you the other night, too, where you didn't answer the call either, all right? There's a list. There's an ordered list of people I go down to get Predators, all right? And so when I finally got to the Fran thing and Fran was signing on, that was great. We got the whole team together. But then when I can't get a response from Blessing, I can't get a response from Kevin the other night, that's when you're like, who's online? Tamor's on. Tamor's always down to play. Get Tamor in here. And then we're off the race.
Yeah, I mean, I take full responsibility in my defense. Nick sent that first message at 9 p.m. and I was immediately ready to go. I would have been ready to go in the moment. But then, like it was the follow-up response of, all right, 10 p.m., 10:30, let's do it. And I didn't respond because I was like, I'll be ready to go at 10. Like, I'll show up when I'm ready
to
show up.
I need to set an alarm clock. I'm not a grandmother.
Yeah, and so legit, I was lying in bed just scrolling through TikToks for a good 30 minutes. And then all of a sudden, I woke up and it was this morning and I was like, crap, I missed the call.
Here's the thing though, because I'm looking back at the text thread and you know at 9:02 Nick texts and at 9:21 you respond, so it's not like it was like 9 on the dot. It was just then you were gone, and then 10:05 I was, or 10:05 I'm like, we got Fran, let's go. And
in the span of about 30 minutes everything changed.
I do appreciate your message though from 8:01 a.m. this morning ... I can explain.
I'm so sorry, but enough about Predator Hunting Grounds. Today's stories include Take-Two making it rain games, Valorant getting a release date, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping, we're streaming Core today at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time. I believe that's going to be what, Greg and Andy?
Yeah, it's me, Andy, and then a couple of the devs from Manicore. What we're doing, of course, if you didn't know, there's the Game Jam, kindoffunny.com/gamejam. You can go, every level entered into the thing gets us $100 for extra life. There's a bunch of prizes you can win. Today, we're with Manicore working on and planning out the Kind of Funny hub world. So when we get all these games, we can attach them all to that and have it go.
Yes, and that's happening on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Remember, kindoffunny.com/gamejam. $100 gets donated to Extra Life for every game submitted. To enter, publish a new game on the core platform in one of the four categories: party game, kind of funniest game, retro game, and pop culture inspired game. There's $5,000 in prizes. Once again, head to kindoffunny.com/gamejam. And again, this is happening today. What's that, Greg?
I was going to say, but yeah, what's important about this is, yeah, today at 1:30, we're doing it because we're your pre-show. At 2 o'clock, you and Andy Cortez are jumping into Crucible, right?
Yeah, that's the plan. 2 p.m. today, right after the core stream. It's me, it's Andy, we're playing Crucible. If for some reason everything doesn't go as planned, because like Crucible is a game that's just come out, free to play.
It's already gone around a couple different times, right? Where I think the kids in the schedule got told it was going to be Apex. Then you guys were like, wait, Crucible's coming out. And then I heard Andy talking last night. I'm like, oof, these Steam reviews aren't good. I don't even know.
and I think it was supposed to come out yesterday, but it didn't come out. Like, there's some weirdness going on with the release. And so if things don't go as planned, we're just going to play Apex, which is also going to be an amazing time, because I think both me and Andy absolutely love Apex. And so that's happening all today on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. So stay tuned for that. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Mohammed Mohammed, Blackjack, now Tribesman. Today we're brought to you by Brooklinen and ExpressVPN, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Rope Report. It's time for some news. We have four stories today.
Baker's Dozen!
Starting with our number one. Take-Two plans to release 93 games in the next 5 years. This is from Rebecca Valentine at gamesindustry.biz. On today's Q4 and fiscal 2020 financial results call with investors, Take-Two president Carl Slatoff said that it expected to release a total of 93 new titles in the next 5 years across both internal labels and outside development studio partners. Breaking it down, Slatoff said that 63 of these titles would be core experiences, including 15 platform extensions of existing titles. 17 would be mid-core titles, and 13 would be considered casual games. Additionally, 47 would come from existing franchises, and 46 would be new IP. 72 are planned for some combination of console, PC, and streaming, with 7 of these also available on mobile, and 21 would be specifically for mobile. 67 of these titles would be paid games, while 26 would be free to play. Also, as I'm reading this, I'm realizing this sounds like a Dr. Seuss book.
It sounds like this weird, like if you were taking the SAT, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of like, if this train leaves here and this train leaves here and they're both traveling at this, what is that? It's like a guess who of like what these fucking games are.
It's like, okay, so now how many console games are going to be free to play? Is like the thing I'm trying to solve here. Slatoff couched this by saying it was possible that this projection was reflective of its current pipeline, and that it was possible that some games would be delayed or canceled, while new games could also be added in the coming months and years. Later in the call, Slatoff clarified that these would be full game releases, and these numbers did not account for add-on or DLC content. Additionally, it was noted that the classification of, quote, core experience did not necessarily translate to AAA titles, as AAA games imply some of the largest investments the company makes. However, he added that core games are titles that are, quote, engaging experiences where you can play anywhere from 5 minutes to 5 hours at a time, end quote. Let me say that again. Core games are titles that are engaging experiences where you can play anywhere from 5 minutes to five hours at a time. Which
that's exactly how I describe core experiences. That's exactly a core experience to me.
To me, that's how I describe video games in general. But to continue, in its financial results posted earlier today, Take-Two identified that fiscal 2021 would be a light year for releases, largely reliant on the company's back catalog. Take-Two is, however, the parent company to a number of publishing and development companies that likely have releases in the pipeline, including major publishing labels like Rockstar Games and 2K Games, a newer independent-focused label Private Division, and mobile developer Social Point. Greg.
Yeah.
93 sounds like a large number of games to come out over the next 5 years.
Does it not? It does, but don't forget the Embracer group from yesterday or whatever, right? With their 69 unannounced games and 100 yeah. whatever the hell else games they had, that there are 118 games in development. So, I mean, by that standard, Embracer group is outpacing Take-Two, which is very sad when you think about it. It's a much bigger Take-Two.
I mean, it's definitely like a quality versus quantity kind of thing, too. Like, Embracer group, they're definitely doing the shotgun approach of, like, buy everything, release everything, whereas Take-Two seems to have more of
they have a more refined palette, only releasing yeah. 93 games rather than Embracer Group's 118 games. Yeah, you're 100% right, Bus. You're 100% right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, yeah, this is always that weird thing when you get on fiscal calls and you have to start talking about the business of games as a business to get into this and start trying to wrap your head around how they have 93 games planned for 5 years, which does sound ridiculous. But then you start bringing in partners, you start bringing in mobile games, you start bringing in the experiences that are smaller, still outrageous when you think about it, but for as big as a company Take-Two is, right? You know, and like, look at like, I guess they, maybe the skate underline, but like for Mafia Definitive Edition, right? Do those three games, even though you get them as one package or whatever, count as three different things? That are, you know, how are they equating out what they're doing here and how this all shakes out in terms of these numbers?
Yeah. Yeah, this all seems interesting. There are a few points in this article that I think are especially interesting. Like, they point out 2021 as a light year for releases, which I guess tells us that that's going to be probably a standard, like the standard year after launch. Like, we talked about this actually on Gamescast, where we look at years like 2014, and I think 2006, which was like also a year after a console launch, or I guess that was a console launch year.
2006 would have been the year I came in here in 2007. So 2006 was the year of PlayStation 3. 2005 was the year of Xbox.
Yes.
I got that right. Yeah, I got that right.
That's about right. Yeah. But like, you look at the year after launch, and I feel like they tend to be light years overall. But yeah, for Take-Two to say that, I feel like that then means that we're probably going to get like our 2K sports games and probably not much else that's substantial after that. Like, you're not going to see a GTA next year, is what I'm reading from that.
Yeah, I'm always hesitant to say that. You never know what the fuck they're going to do, right? But yeah, I wonder how much of next year's going to be a light year is based on, sure, of course, the usual wind down from, hey, it's the new console generation. We want to start making stuff for that, where everybody's getting their sea legs and figuring it out. But also how much of it is the COVID stuff, right? You know, Phil Spencer's been public about that. There wouldn't be a delay in hardware, but games are going to see a delay. You'll see slower games in 2021. I wonder if that's part of what they're seeing here, especially with this many titles at play, right? You figure even if, you know, 10% of them had some kind of delay, setback, change in their schedule based on working from home, COVID, whatever, mocap studio, stuff like that, that is a ripple effect that you feel pretty quickly.
So with their quote that I referenced earlier, where they're talking
engaging
about
engaging experience where you can play anywhere from 5 minutes to 5 hours.
Yeah, because that's how they describe core games. What do you think what then would you say is not a core game for them if that's how they describe it?
I'm scrolling back through. What was the breakdown they had in the differences? Because they had the core experience, obviously, but then they had another one in there.
They talked like core versus casual, essentially, right? They said
wasn't there a mid? Am I making mid-core titles? That's what I love. 17 mid-core titles.
So yeah, 63 core experiences, and then 17 mid-core, and then 13 casual.
So 13 casual have to be mobile games, right?
Yeah, you would imagine.
I think that's just the easiest way to lop it off and toss it in there. Probably knowing Take-Two and how wide their catalog is, you're looking at some party game, whatever, for Switch, maybe a party game for, you know, the consoles as well or whatever. Some toss that in there like that. It's more this mid-core title that I think gets interesting. 17 would be mid-core titles. And I do wonder, and this isn't to insult sports fans at all, I wonder if that's where the 2K, you know, sports titles go, right? Of NBA, of wrestling, because 17 is a smaller number, but still a large number. And now, granted, I understand 100% that core games are titles that are engaging experiences where you can play anywhere from 5 minutes to 5 hours at a time. So that's how he's describing core, but mid-core could be that as well. And the fact that maybe mid-core is the kind of game that only a genre fan is buying. I own a PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. I only pick up NBA every year. I don't really buy other stuff for it. Whereas their core games would be their Mafias, their GTA, stuff like that, right? The BioShock.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very interesting take that I could see very much being accurate to how they're talking about it. As I read it, I definitely looped in the sports games with core games, because I feel like when you look at numbers, in the ways that Take-Two was talking about this during a financial results call, I feel like you would want to loop in games like NBA 2K with the core titles, because I imagine the returns that you're seeing on 2K are similar to the returns that you're seeing on your bigger titles, with exception of like GTA or Red Dead Redemption, which are going to be like those standout titles in terms of sales and what they mean for the industry.
Interesting little wrinkle here. PC Games N reported on this as well. I'm looking. It's Carrie Talbot. Carrie here has a little bit expanded on that, right? Hefty core game. 63 are described as core gaming experiences, of which 15 will be platform extensions of existing titles from its catalog. The remaining number is accounted by 17, and then it's a direct quote, mid-core or arcade-style experiences. So there, it's mid-core or arcade style, which again, I think speaks to what I'm talking about, where I would put mid-core being a sports game not everybody picks up, and then an arcade experience being like WWE, the one they have from Saber, WWE, 2K Battlegrounds. And then aren't they doing some kind of not NBA Playgrounds, but Playgrounds thing? Isn't there some kind of arcade NBA game, or no? Did I make that up?
I mean, the arcade NBA game is NBA Playgrounds, but I don't think they're doing any other one outside of that, as far as I know, unless there's like a mobile thing.
Yeah. So you figure that's where that fits in, right? Of trying to get that audience that isn't us, isn't the people who are listening to this podcast, or in this instance, making the podcast, but aren't out there buying everything, chasing everything, waiting with bated breath for what, you know, Hangar 13 is doing next, or what's going on with the next BioShock.
Yeah. And as we've been talking about, I've been looking through like the different Wikipedia pages for the different companies that Take-Two owns. And I'm looking at games like Kerbal Space Program 2, which I would probably assume that they might look at as like a mid-core title, right? It being more of an indie game. You wouldn't really call that.
Are titles that are engaging experiences where you can play anywhere from 5 minutes to 5 hours at a time. That's Kerbal. Kerbal goes on forever.
Yeah, but I feel like that's everything. Like,
we know you're 100%. It's a terrible definition. It's a terrible definition of what a core game's title is.
But yeah, I look at stuff that... I look at the stuff that Private Division is doing, and like, granted, I guess Kerbal is actually the only one that I'm looking at out of their catalog that I would even think of as mid-core, because I'm looking at The Outer Worlds, which I think you would describe as core.
Yeah.
Disintegration, which I would imagine you describe as core. Ancestors, The Humankind Odyssey, which I don't even know what you would put that in. Either core or mid-core, right? That's definitely not casual. And then the original Kerbal.
That's core,
Which I could see the argument that mid-core would be the sports titles and more of like the arcadey games, and then everything else that you would consider as a gamer like a hardcore game, you would say slides into that category. It's just an interesting way to categorize it on a financial call, which is the thing that I kind of take away from it. But I could.
Again, you're trying to break it down for people who are just investors, right? You're trying to go through and like break it down to people who have put their money into it and don't necessarily think about games the same way we think about games, which is always that language problem, I think, and trying to understand what one side wants and one side doesn't. You're right about, I think, there being no GTA, because usually when there is a GTA coming, they'll say there's going to be a GTA coming so they can get everybody excited and pump the stock price.
And I think at the very least, you wouldn't say that it's a light year if you know that a GTA is coming next year, or like something that is like that type of game coming next year. The Nanobiologist writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, "Hi, Blessing Greg. Are we approaching a time when keeping up with the latest and greatest games from major publishers will be impossible? Take-Two Interactive announced it will release 93 games over the next 5 years. This, along with the recent news that Saber Interactive have 118 games in development, just has me more worried. Of course, nowadays, 99.9% of us don't even try to play everything. But could we be reaching a critical mass to where we can't even play the games we want to play because there are too many of them competing? Could this be the ballooning that will pop the video game bubble when projects can't make their money back because there are too many good games out there vying for our money and time? Thanks, the Nanobiologist."
What a fascinating question, Nano, as always. I would argue that this is the first sign of it. We're way past this. We're way past being able to play the latest and greatest every time. Like, I remember, and I know I sound like a broken record a lot of these shows, but when I started at IGN, man, like 2007, like it was literally possible to play everything that mattered. That like, you know, and when I say that mattered, I'm being general because I don't want to be facetious or overgeneralized, but it was the thing of, I remember Brudvig being like, "Oh, this is great on Xbox." I was like, "All right, I'll play it tonight." You play it, go home, play it tonight, come back the next day, and you would have played it. You know, every PlayStation release we were able to play. I mean, granted, and this is because, of course, like two games were coming to the PSN every week. You know what I mean? It was fucking super rub-a-dub and championship sprint. And we're like, I got nothing else to fucking play. Why not jump in there and do that?
Yeah.
I remember those days and how it's totally changed. Hold on. There's starting to leaf blow out here. I'm changing this.
Oh, no. But yeah, to what you're saying, like, even for us, we both host PSLW XOXO and we do the segment 104 games ranked. And we read the drop every week. And even just if we were to just focus on PlayStation, we still wouldn't be able to play every game coming to PlayStation because that's just how many games are coming out nowadays.
Yeah. And that's upsetting, I think, personally. You know what I mean? Like, I want to say, like, it's awesome. I love it. I love where games are at. I think one of the reasons the games industry is so healthy and makes so much money and provides so many careers for people is the fact that it's so easy to make a video game, just like it's easy to make a podcast during a pandemic, that it's so easy to make a game and get it out there. But I do think that that's where we run into it. And this is driving back around to, I think, you know, the question here. Could this be ballooning and pop the video game bubble when projects can't make their money back because there's too many good games out there vying for money and time, says Nano. That's already the problem with being an indie. Like,
yeah.
You know, I think we bang the drum a lot for indie devs. We, of course, do the Kind of Funny Game Showcase. Right now we're doing the Guerrilla Collective, obviously coming up here. That's indie and a whole bunch of other stuff. But it's because those are the ones that are in the biggest struggle. And it's always interesting because indie games have a smaller budget, which means it's easier to recoup their money so they don't have to sell as much. But even saying that, like, talking to as many indie developers as I've been able to talk to, I would say in the past 3 years, as we've really, you know, used our platform to support that, even saying, oh, you don't have to sell as much, you still have to sell so much. And it's still why you see people snapping up Epic Game Store deals, snapping up Xbox Game Pass deals. It's that thing of, it is such a fucking risk of, yep, there's a chance. There's a chance you could be Cuphead. There's a chance you could be the success story for indie games. But there's a greater chance it'll be one of the dozens and dozens and dozens of other games that come out every fucking week that don't make a dime back. And then what do? You know what I mean? Like, I would like to think most of us have played Game Dev Story, and that even while totally comical and, you know, goofy in a mobile game for the most part, because you can get it elsewhere, it is the idea that, right, like, you are making a game to fund your next game. And so even when it's like, oh man, we made 20% more than we put in, that's great. That doesn't carry you through the next calendar year, right, of keeping a staff employed. It's not like you're making your game and retiring on that money, unless you were going to make one game and never make another, but that's not rarely the case, right?
Yeah, like, to the nanobiologist's question here, right? Could this be the ballooning that will pop the video game bubble when projects can't make their money back because there are too many good games out there vying for our money and time? I'm surprised we haven't, like, already hit the point where, like, everything's kind of, not necessarily everything's toppled, but, like, you know, there's a huge scaling back as far as, like, the amount of games that are coming out. Because I have no, like, I'm legit shocked when I see, like, certain games come out on certain platforms, because I'm like, dude, how are y'all making money? Like, Telling Lies coming to PlayStation is exciting. Not, plenty of people are going to play Telling Lies on PlayStation, but at the same time, like, Telling Lies, for how great of a game Telling Lies is not going to get the amount of people that should be playing that game on PlayStation, because there's just so many other games coming out. Like, Huntdown is the game I've been talking about all week, because Huntdown is an incredible game. Huntdown is not going to get Cuphead numbers, right? And like, I don't want to compare the two games, because, like, I would say Cuphead is a better game than Huntdown, but that said, like, Huntdown is still an incredibly made game that if it came out in, let's say, 2010, I think would have gotten some sort of mainstream success, I guess, within the game sphere. Like, maybe not have broken out to, like, TV or whatever, but
it would have had a chance at actually getting attention, getting eyes on it, getting people to play, right? Like,
talking about
like a Geometry Wars or even a Rezogun or something, like, where you have these games that do break out, but as the market gets more and more crowded, it's easier and easier to see this stuff get lost.
Yeah, and I think we're in an interesting place right now, because, you know, talking about, if we're talking about it on the market side of things as opposed to, like, just us as a player's side of things, right now we're at a place where there are a lot of opportunities and resources as far as, like, if you're an indie developer and you're trying to put a game out. Like, there's Xbox Game Pass, you know, and we've had Outer Wilds and Void Bastards and Streets of Rage 4 and just, like, a lot of different indie games that might not have gotten the light of day or gotten the time of day from many different players, getting that time of day because they're available on a service that is supporting them and also paying for them to be on that platform.
Yeah.
Thoughts like justifying their existence, right? You have that. You have Epic Games Store, which is doing the thing where they're giving developers a higher cut, but then also, like, you know, also paying for developers to come out exclusively on that store, thus, like, leading to them justifying their own existence as games, right? Like, being able to pay for pay for their own development. Like, and you have cases like that that are, you have cases like that that are changing the ways in which indie developers can come out and thrive in a way that I'm curious to see in the future. Like, how sustainable is this, or is this just a thing that's happening in the time being?
And that's the thing, when you bring up the Epic Game Store, you bring up Xbox Game Pass. On top of, hey, we're going to pay you so you at least make some money, or you earn back your budget, or whatever the deal may be, it's also the fact of, hey, we're going to market this, and we're going to get behind this. We're going to, you know, champion your game and put it into trailers and put it on the front page and do these parts of deals that the game that doesn't do that and just releases on every platform does the shotgun scattergun approach. But, you know, when we talk about, 104 games PSN ranked, right? It's this idea of I play those games the same way I play a lot of the other games I get in my inbox or whatever, where, oh, this is a cool idea. I jump in, I play it for a while, and if it doesn't click, I bounce. And it's not because I want to fucking go run errands or I want to go work out or some shit. It's because, okay, this isn't connecting with me, and I have an endless supply of games over here. And I don't even mean me as Greg, the guy who reviews games and gets a bunch of game codes. I mean, as a consumer, there's this endless sea of games that I've heard good things about and I haven't played. And I think that is what's so ridiculous and what's so interesting about right now in this weird time where we came off the spring releases and then, you know, Last of Us got delayed and we're in this weird wait for next gen and Ghost of Tsushima now. And we're in the, you know, the hangover period with Animal Crossing, where this is the first time in a while I feel there's been this concerted effort from a lot of people of like, well, I'm home, I'm going to tackle my backlog, I'm going to go do things I haven't done, right? Which is great. But even then, it's showing through how we all pick our games and what we go play. Where it's like, I'm running to Assassin's Creed Odyssey and playing something, you know, that's like a comfort food for me that I know intricately and I know what how it is, but I want to see the rest of that content. And it's like, I turned on my Switch the other day to do Mario Party. And I looked over and I was like, all right, I still have Return of the Obra Dinn on here. Like, Telling Lies, everybody was like, oh, it's on, you would love Return of the Obra Dinn for the same reasons, you should play it on Switch now, yada yada. And I haven't done that. Like, the backlog is so vast that when we talk about a smaller game, an indie game, when we talk about the latest and greatest, you jump into these things, you try them real quick. And if they don't, it's not even anymore if they don't live up to what's happening that week or that month. It's if they don't live up to what's Return of the Obra Dinn, which was like up for Game of the Year awards, right? Like, it's that kind of thing where it's like, well, there's so many things outside of your family, your books, comic books, movies that are pulling for your attention that the idea here of like, of course, nowadays, 99% of us don't even try to play everything. I think that's been that way for so long now. And I think it happened quietly. And because it is that thing of, you know, the fun thing about doing podcasts and you, the viewer or listener, listening to different podcasts is you get to experience so much stuff secondhand that you get to have a feel for it. And that's obviously why I love like doing Gamescast or, you know, PS I Love You with You, Bus, where you'll come in and talk about something I'm not playing. It's the same way, I'm sure, for people who pair us with Giant Bomb or IGN or whoever. Insert your favorite. Okay, Beast. They put, you know, you put your favorite podcast next to us here and you start hearing what these different voices are all playing. And then you get these weird convergences where it's like, cool, everyone's talking about Last of Us. Everyone's talking about Animal Crossing. Everyone's going to be talking about these very specific tentpole things. But when you do that and that happens and that's awesome. And God, it was so cool at launch. It's still cool now, but at launch of Animal Crossing, when that's all it was, and we were all having the shared experience, you still have to sit there and think about, again, the dozens of games that are completely overshadowed. And then even to go the opposite direction of it, when I do find an indie or I do find something smaller that isn't on the map and I go and champion that, it is a fucking razor's edge between, man, Greg's really introducing me to cool games, and man, Greg needs to shut up about this game. Right? Like, how many times have we seen that? Of like, you know, you talk about a game twice in a week and it's like, oh my God, this thing again. It's like, yeah, but I'm trying to tell you it's, but I understand. But it's like, if I just say it once, I don't hit everybody. And it's this thing, but it's actually what it's such a clusterfuck of trying to talk about games in a way that moves the spotlight around, actually helps dictate what is the latest and greatest, but then also doesn't overshine things that should be shining.
Yeah. And it makes doing this job very interesting because, like, you know, there's the question of, there's the comment of, you know, 99.9% of us don't even try to play anything. I don't even think it's a trying thing. I just think it's impossible for us to play everything. It's impossible for us to even play everything that is noteworthy. Like, you know, me trying out Outer Wilds. You know, I tried that game out, you know, a couple times trying to get into it, and I couldn't get into it within like probably like the cumulative 3 to 4 hours that I put into it, and I just had to bounce, right? I couldn't push through it because there's another game, you know, that I would probably get into quicker, you know, that I could talk about and play and actually fall in love with. The amount of indie games that are coming out, especially like nowadays, it's interesting, right? I'm curious to see, like, is there a moment where things pop? Is there a moment where, like, you know, indie games kind of have a dip in terms of how many of them come out? Because, like, again, I'm still shocked to see how many games come out on a weekly basis that come out and try. And, you know, for most of these games, I don't know how they're doing. I don't know if these games are making their return on investment. I don't know if, like, the worth is there. It's just a very interesting thing to me.
Yeah, and I think it's honestly sad, right? Because it's not, again, I love that the games industry is thriving and succeeding the way it is. But it was hard for me to let that go of when it was, you know, doing early Beyond, not even late Beyond, early Beyond. I'm talking PS3, you know, Roper Dunham Beyond. Like, it was hard to not be up on everything, not have touched everything, not have put 5 hours into everything, because it's just impossible anymore, right? Where, I mean, back in the day when everything had to be boxed and put on the shelf, like, that limited, like, how many games you were going to get. And it meant that it was possible to play everything that mattered. I didn't play, like, you know, the SpongeBob stuff because there wasn't trophies back then. But it was like, you had this idea, you had this way to be on top of everything. And now that you can't, it's both rewarding, but it is also this thing of, you know, okay, cool. What separates me from just being a video game fan? And obviously, hopefully, it's the years of experience and, you know, critiquing and doing all these different things. But there's plenty of times I catch myself where, yeah, and where I'm just like dismissing something, or I didn't play enough of it, or whatever. And it's just like, well, I'm not really giving valuable feedback here. I'm just giving the feedback I can. Now, granted, I think that works in a segment like 104 PSN games ranked, where the whole thing is, it is a taste test. How much have you gotten into? What do you know about it? But it's a weird back and forth, push and pull. And again, like, it's a struggle for me internally and with Kind of Funny, I think, of like, how do we help champion games that you don't necessarily want to hear about, right? Like, you know, there's always the thing, you know, I love for a number of reasons when people want to cry clickbait on a headline or a image, right? There's one recently, I forget, oh, it was PS I Love You, right? It was like PlayStation 4 or 5 already failing. And like the first comment was like clickbait. And somebody was like, it's the first story they talk about. And they talk about it for 45 minutes. Like, that's not clickbait. But it's also the thing of, the thumbnails, right, have to be billboards for the shows. And so if we just put it up with the discussion we're having or whatever we're having and don't have an image that we know is popular to it, right, that show performs less. That show doesn't perform as well. And so this is like the game of, you know, trying to move it all around and give the audience the vegetables while also giving them ice cream, right? Where it's like,
yeah,
I want to talk about whatever big AAA game you want to talk about, but I also want to talk about Moonlighter, and I also want to tell you about this thing, and I also want to say this.
Yeah, like there's a reason that Huntdown isn't the thumbnail for PS Love You XOXO, right? Like, there's a reason why that's not taking up the first 40 minutes of the episode. But like the fact that we're able to talk about, let's say, Ghost of Tsushima or PlayStation Studios at the beginning of an episode, and then towards the middle of it, you know, champion games that we are enjoying, right, get to talk about Streets of Rage 4 or Telling Lies or Huntdown. You know, I think that's what makes it worth it, and that's what makes what we do like a thing worth doing, is because we're able to kind of come down to that each and every episode and kind of bring it back around to like being able to talk about the games that we love. Back to the market conversation though, like, you know, as we've been talking about, I've been trying to like think back to the indie games that I've played over the last couple years and whether or not they've been circumstantial in some cases, like, you know, like Outer Wilds and Void Bastards, I tried both of those out because they're on Game Pass.
Sure.
Dead Cells came out kind of early for the Switch. Well, that came out like the second year of the Switch, right? When the Switch was still having that moment for indie games. Same with Golf Story.
Yeah, I would say during its like indie influx, right? Where that really was, this machine is meant for this.
Yeah, Golf Story, Celeste, I think also kind of fit in that category. Is it, and like when I also think of like other indie games that are popping, I think I connect John Wick Hex, for example, to Epic Game Store and things like that. As an indie, and this is like my last question for this topic, like as an indie developer and as somebody who's putting out an indie game, is it like possible even to like come out and be a breakout success without that type of connection? Because like Cuphead is another one that came out exclusively for Xbox, right? And had Xbox championing it all the way through.
Yeah. It's a good question, and obviously there's going to be examples you can throw out that have.
For sure.
I think, you know, Cuphead's a very interesting case, because, and I'm not even trying to do like, but like when I was doing Up at Noon, early, someone sent me a YouTube video of Cuphead at a convention. And like, I mean, like, you know, whatever, they're from Canada, wherever in Canada, some small convention there. And I remember hitting them up and being like, dude, this game looks insane. Do you want to come talk about it on IGN and Up at Noon? And they're being like, yes, we live in the middle of nowhere, Canada. And I was like, oh, we don't have a budget to fly people. So one day when you're in SF, let me know. And then years later, they were on the Xbox stage and got, you know, this giant thing. I was like, oh shit, it's a fucking thing. I believe that even if it was able to turn my head that way, I think Cuphead could have still been Cuphead the way we know it without the Xbox deal. But I think that is such a different ball of wax, right? Because you're right that Xbox would have chosen to champion something else and not give it the same placement on the store, right? So you'd lose that thing, but you'd have all the sites still talking about it, and it just looked so different, right? That's the problem, and I think it's what we talk about a lot. When we were just talking about not the third party Xbox thing, but the last time Xbox did XO20
XO19,
when they announced some games, we're all like, it's that thing where Xbox games have a look to them, and like we were struggling how to really say that, right? If they all kind of look grounded, they don't have that, like, you know, Fortnite, there's a look to an Xbox game right now, at least in what we just saw,
what Tim calls Breath of the Wild,
right? I feel, and that's great. Well, I feel indie games struggle from that too, right? Where it is that if your indie game doesn't look dramatically different from another indie game, it's so hard to put them in your head and have them separate and not be able to pick up, wait, which one's that and what's that and yada, yada, yada. And so that's where having people champion, having it get in front of you and having it be free and having Epic's Game Store give you, you know, this thing, or having PlayStation Plus, or having, you know, Game Pass, especially Game Pass, because Game Pass is literally perfect for what we were talking about earlier in this thing, right? Of like, there's this sea of games. So I play this one for 10, 20 minutes, an hour. And if it doesn't click for me, guess what? Bam, I'm out to the next thing. What can I go? And you can run through until you find that thing. It's Netflix.
Yeah, exactly. Story number two. Valorant has a release date. Greg, you added this one to the doc. I don't know if there is a source for it.
It's the press release from Riot.
It's the press release.
Yeah.
It reads, Riot Games today announced their highly anticipated character-based tactical shooter video game, Valorant, will launch for free on June 2nd, 2020, across the majority of regions worldwide. In the days leading up to June 2nd, the game's massively popular closed beta will come to an end on May 28th, enabling the team at Riot to reset player accounts, patch new content, and prepare for the beginning of Valorant's worldwide launch. Once officially live, fans of the competitive 5v5 tactical shooter will start fresh, progressing from the same starting line as they compete with players around the world. Reinforcing its level of commitment to players, the Valorant team will deliver new game content, game modes, new agents, and new maps shortly after launch. To meet rising player demand, Riot has also prioritized additional new game server deployments on their short-term roadmap in order to lower latency for Valorant players. These new server locations include Atlanta, Dallas, London, Madrid, and Warsaw. So there you go. Exciting stuff. Greg, will you ever play Valorant?
Never. I'm not gonna play Valorant. I mean, like, I'm sure, I mean, like, it's literally what we were just talking about in terms of competition, where I'm sure Valorant's awesome. And I'm sure if I wanted to sit down and on my PC and play it and do all the stuff, I could get into it and have a thing. But it's just like, I look at it and I'm like, okay, this team-based thing, that's not my style. I'd much rather go play Predator and me and Nick act like assholes.
I entirely missed the closed beta. I'm really excited to try it out. Like, June 2nd was actually... Yeah, like, June 2nd...
You're that excited if you missed the beta, you know what I'm saying?
I just didn't want to try. Oh, I didn't want to jump into the hoop.
Sick burn, you know? Greg!
Oh, thank you, Kevin. We got him. Cross-examination.
You got him!
Yeah, I'll play it when I play it. But yeah, like, Valorant is a game that's looked interesting to me. Granted, the impressions that I got coming out of the beta from other people seem to kind of dampen my excitement for it. Like, it seems like it's really cool, but at the same time, it doesn't seem to be like an Overwatch killer or like an Apex killer or anything like that. Like, it just seems to be another game to kind of stand in that, like, Counter-Strike, I guess Overwatch also, like, that sphere of games.
Sure.
So I'm excited to try it out and see if it's for me.
We'll find out soon enough.
Story number three. Could we see the return of that Scott Pilgrim game? This comes from Jordan Alleman at IGN. Ubisoft is potentially teasing the return of the infamous delisted Ubisoft Montreal Scott Pilgrim game that launched back in 2010. Last night, the Academy held a rewatch of Edgar Wright's Scott Pilgrim vs. the World adaptation. Scott Pilgrim creator Brian Lee O'Malley tuned in for the watch-along. O'Malley tweeted during the movie that Ubisoft should, quote, bring back the Scott Pilgrim game, end quote, after the Xbox Live Arcade slash PSN network title was delisted from both stores on December 30th, 2014. At the time, it wasn't clear why the game was taken down, but it was most likely due to licensing issues. The original tweet from Brian O'Malley, again, was he tweeted, bring back the Scott Pilgrim game, hashtag bring back Scott Pilgrim game, hashtag watch with the Academy. And then Ubisoft replies to it with just like the thinking face emoji, which I think is interesting. Greg, do you think this is an actual tease or is this just Ubisoft Twitter?
No, I was Googling around and it's so hard because it's just not there. But I kind of funny.com/you're wrong. Feel free to chime in on this one. Ubisoft's Twitter has been saucy before, right? Like their social media manager is out there having fun. Usually, I think, like, not, you know, dunking and yelling at people, but like I've seen funny responses from them.
Being cheeky.
It's the idea that, like, I don't think this is a tease. I just think it's the social media manager being like, yeah, sure. All right, cool. Like, that's an interesting idea. I'll do this thing. But the fact that, like, it would be a tease, I think, if, like, Brian Lee O'Malley had tweeted, like, at Ubisoft, bring back the game. You know what I mean? Was, like, calling them out and they were responding to him. That would be more of an orchestrated thing. Whereas this, I just think it's Ubisoft being like, okay. I see what you're saying. And, that game is beloved. If they could bring it back, that'd be huge.
Yeah, if they could bring it back, I think that'd be a pretty big thing from the sense of, like, if you partner again with the Scott Pilgrim people, right? Like, my thing is having Brian Lee O'Malley tweet this, and then Ubisoft responding to it kind of doesn't point at a tease to me, because, like, I feel like if you're gonna respond to anybody tweeting about the Scott Pilgrim game, Brian Lee O'Malley is gonna be the one. Like, you wouldn't necessarily want to respond to randos if you're going to, like, stir that kind of stuff up. But Brian Lee O'Malley being the creator of Scott Pilgrim is worth responding to. But yeah, like, I think them bringing it back would be cool. Like, I think that'd be a pretty big thing that a lot of people would be happy about.
Yeah, it always came down to licensing, right? That was always the rumor, I think. I don't know if it was ever confirmed.
Licensing was definitely, like, the belief. But yeah, kindoffunny.com/you're wrong if you have any more info on. If you have a scoop,
you are Ubisoft. Ubisoft tweeted it right now and let us know. But yeah, that was a game people fucking loved.
Our last story, story number four. Id Software is removing anti. This is from Julia Lee at Polygon. Doom Eternal developer Id Software will remove the game's PC anti-cheat program Denuvo in its next patch. The anti-cheat technology was added with Doom Eternal's first update on May 14th, less than a week ago, to an overwhelmingly negative response from players. The game ended up getting review bombed on Steam after the patch dropped. Quote, despite our best intentions, feedback from players has made it clear that we must reevaluate our approach to anti-cheat integration. And this is from executive producer Marty Stratton, as he was talking about this on the subreddit. He continues, with that, we'll be removing the anti-cheat technology from the game in our next PC update. As we examine any future anti-cheat in Doom Eternal, at a minimum, we must consider giving campaign-only players the ability to play without anti-cheat software installed, as well as ensure the overall timing of any anti-cheat integration better aligns with player expectations around clear initiatives, like ranked or competitive play, where demand for anti-cheat is far greater, end quote. Stratton noted that any performance issues that players may have noticed in the last update were not caused by Denuvo and are separate issues that will be fixed with the next PC update. He said the performance problems players have seen on PC are, quote, based on a code change around VRAM allocation, end quote. Similarly to Valorant's anti-cheat, Doom Eternals was required to run on startup and has a deep level of access to information on the PC. No time frame was given for the next PC update, but players on social media and Reddit are already celebrating the death of Denuvo, at least in Doom Eternal. So there you go. That's a good turnaround, especially for
the
this being like
works,
a,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like an issue that's been like a week old, right? It's nice to see them come out and be like, all right, we fucked up.
We hear you.
Especially for Doom, that is like a single player game. You imagine that people don't necessarily want that anti-cheat software in there if they're going to just play the single player, which
is totally. Let me cheat. What do I care? You know what I mean? It's back to the never ending argument of stuff like that. If once you own the game and it's single player and it's not ruining anybody else's experience, what do you care? If you buy an XP booster, you know, you get some other thing. It's up to you. Or if you're playing on easier, you're playing on hard, or you're turning this off, you're turning that on, like, whatever. I understand, you know, you want to have an experience for a game, but once it's in people's hands, they're going to do whatever they want to do with it.
Craig, I'm very excited to see when this new Doom update comes out that removes Doom anti-software, because I care so much about Doom Eternal on PC. But that is so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to Mom and Grop shops today, where would I look?
You go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today, we have the Iron Man VR demo. It's coming out today on PS4 for PSVR. Yeah. Downloading the demo grants you the molten lava armor in the final game. And then this is from the PS blog today. They say, quote, "Today we're excited to announce that the PSVR Marvel's Iron Man VR bundle is launching alongside the PSVR exclusive game on July 3rd. Play as Tony Stark, suit up as the armored Avenger, and face off against some of Iron Man's greatest foes." We then have a question here from Dan Rolls 22. Who wrote into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, "Hey, Kinda Funny crew, with today's announcement of an Iron Man VR PlayStation VR bundle, I have to ask if this is the time to get PSVR if you don't have it already. We can probably assume that there will be a new edition of the headset at some point during the next generation, so should I just wait for the better version or hop on the VR train now? I'm very excited for Iron Man to come out, but if I'm able to have a better experience on PS5, I might wait. Would love to know your thoughts. Thanks and stay safe. Dan Rolls 22.
Great question. It's one we've gone back and forth on. My thing is that, yes, there will be a PlayStation VR. Well, let me dial this back, because my prediction, one of my saucy predictions was that we wouldn't ever see PlayStation VR 2, even though I do believe PlayStation's working on it. For the intents and purposes of this conversation, we are going to say there is going to be a PlayStation VR 2, okay?
Yep.
Even if there's going to be a PlayStation VR 2, that is not going to happen in 2020, and I doubt it's going to happen in 2021. Because I don't think you're not going to do it along. When they do the PlayStation 5 event, they're not going to be like PlayStation 5 and PlayStation VR 2. That's too much money to get you to go spend on launch day. In the same vein, when you've actually got Steam building in 2021 for the PlayStation 5, I don't think you also say it's all these games and this. Because what I want you to do is, as PlayStation, look at the price of the PlayStation 5, look at the library of the PlayStation 5 in 2021 and go, oh, I need to get this. They've already made a big deal about PlayStation VR being backwards compatible, or PlayStation 5 being backwards compatible with PlayStation VR. So I think they're going to ride that out until probably, if they do it, 2022. Yeah. So arguably, I would say yes, if you are into PlayStation VR, do this. What's interesting, I guess this doesn't help you since you don't have it, the demo that they have out right now is what I play. So it's the Malibu tutorial mission, interactive Stark Jet starring Tony Friday and Pepper Potts, Out of the Blue Stark Jet gameplay mission, Fight Challenge optional mission, Advanced Combat Challenge optional mission. That might actually be more than I played at my demo. And for me, like I said, like that was the one I played. And I was like, holy shit, this is great. I haven't played the final thing. I went on the store when I saw that today and downloaded it. So I'm going to do that tonight or whatever. But I loved it. And I'm not saying it's worth PlayStation VR on its own. I'm saying it and Blood and Truth and Moss and Beat Saber and Astro Bot, like Firewall, which has a sale and a double XP going on right now. Trover Saves the Universe, yes. And there's a library to justify buying it now. And I think there's enough time that if you get into PlayStation 5, I don't think you're going to be like, oh, fuck, I should have waited. Now, I could eat my words and they do the PlayStation 5 event and here's PlayStation VR 2, but I sincerely doubt it.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I think go for it. I think get PSVR because, like, if we do see PSVR 2, I think that's probably, like, 2 years away. Yeah. But then also, like, with PS5 being backwards compatible with PSVR, then, like, that carries over. And I think that makes the investment especially worth it because you can at least expect to get use out of this over the next couple years. And, like, bringing in the great back catalog that's there already with all the games you mentioned. Yeah, I definitely think it's worth getting PSVR.
Agreed.
Out today. Timely is out today on PC. What the Golf is out today on Switch. Biped is out for Switch. Ember, PC. Trailmakers for PS4. Pushy and Pulley in Blockland for a Switch, which I think I remember seeing in like a Nintendo Direct or something. That sounds very familiar. Kevin, could you possibly get like a trailer for Pushy and Pulley in Blockland?
Yeah, man, I'll get right on it.
Thanks. Luxar for Switch. Real Mist for Masterpiece Edition for Switch. Monster Prom Double XL for Switch. Arrest of a Stone Buddha for Switch. Steel Rain for Switch. Lost Artifacts Time Machine for Switch. The Persistence for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Red Wings Aces of the Sky for Switch. Skelly Celeste and Stramium Immortally Double Pack for Switch. Aqua Lungers for Switch. Flux Terraria for PS4 and Switch. Old Gods Rising for PC, Skura Stars for PC, Kinda Heroes, the cutest RPG ever for PC, Monster Train for PC, Vetrex for Steam, Five Nights at Freddy's Help Wanted for Switch, Observation, Steam, and then multiple bonuses can be earned this week in GTA Online, including 1 million GTA bucks for completing 10 million daily objectives, and a new Twitch Prime benefit of GTA 200,000 GTA bucks, which all sound very up my alley, and I might boot up GTA Online right after this. Kevin, were you able to look up that game? Are you still looking for it? If you're still looking for it, I can go with Nidates. Pushy and Pulley. Blockland.
I found it. Sorry, I'm just prepping the other cameras.
Oh, the old thing.
Push me.
Yeah, and go ahead. Keep prepping. I'm going to do Nidates.
Satisfaction. Remember that song? Remember that song?
That's a good one.
Nidates. Bartlow's. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Come on.
Is this from a movie? What is it from?
No, it's a song. It's a song that played in like bars and things. I'll find it.
Bars? It's 1920s bars. Nidates, Bartlow's Dread Machine will debut on Steam Early Access this July with a full commercial launch on Xbox One and Windows in the fall 2020. Armin Ibrisagic, designer of multi-million-selling Goat Simulator and his development studio Double Moose, have today unveiled first details of Just Die Already, a ridiculously gory and unpredictable physics-based sandbox game. Just Die Already will be releasing on PC this summer, but players won't have to wait too long before they can escape to the game's crazy world themselves. A demo version will be available on Steam shortly, with players able to wishlist now in order to be notified of the game's release. And then lastly, Borderlands 3's Takedown at the Guardian Breach drops June 4th, and the new DLC, Bounty of Blood, Fistful Redemption, drops June 25th. Kev,
this
do we
song
have...
is a fucking banger, Bless. I just put it into random for you. I've never seen the music video. I put it into the entire company Slack in the random channel with no context. But this song not only is a banger, and it's a very graphic music video. Really? I did not expect it. It's Benassia. Satisfaction.
Yeah. Wait.
It's a fucking man.
Wait, is the song Satisfaction?
Yeah.
That you're singing? Damn. I know that song. I just didn't.
Well, then how did
you
not hear my perfect rendition of it as the computer voice?
Yeah, redo it. Wait, sing it again.
Push me and pull me until
I get it now.
Bless, do you still want this? Or
fucking crushed it. Kevin, have you watched this video? It is graphic.
No, yeah, I'm familiar with the video. Yeah,
I'm very familiar with the song. I just didn't gather that was the song you were singing. That's hilarious. This was Pulley and Pushy that Kevin was showing, by the way. It in fact is not a game that I'm familiar with, but no. It still looks interesting nonetheless.
Does it? It's like a cross of Bomberman and something much cheaper.
You don't like Bomberman?
No, I love Bomberman. The other part was the cheaper part that lessened it.
Deals of the day.
This is just women in bikinis like using power tools.
It's going to
be telling me this during the show, and I'm going to get distracted. Now I'm going to be watching this at the same time as I'm reading the ad. It's going to be all messy.
Have you noticed that Blessing is a very young man?
Go to the ad. Deals of the day for you. The Epic Mega Sale on Epic Games Store continues today with great discounts on major titles, a $10 coupon issued for each purchase. That's $14.99 and above. And Civilization VI is now free starting now through May 28th at 11 a.m. Eastern. I should also point out, I think it's Nibel. Yeah, Nibel on Twitter was kind of talking about this a bit because there were either leaks or rumors or reports or whatever talking about the upcoming free games on Epic Games Store. And this one was right on the money. Civilization VI was predicted as being free today on Epic Games Store. And there's also a couple other games that he predicted. So go to @Nibel on Twitter or @Nibelian, I believe, on Twitter if you want to see what the other predicted games were. I think one of them might have been like a Borderlands thing, but I'm not positive as I'm talking about it off the top of the dome right now.
Sorry to interrupt. Just without any context, I also put it into the family Slack channel here with Lucy and Jen.
Perfect. Benny Benassi.
Oh, no, Jen says, oh, yeah, we heard you. So I guess I'm louder than I thought I was out here doing the show.
Also for deals of the day, we have an Xbox Game Pass console update. Alan Wake and Cities Skylines are both out today on Xbox Game Pass, and then Minecraft Dungeons is coming on May 26th. Now it's time for reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Brooklinen. Bringing comfort into your home is the ultimate form of self-care. And now more than ever, it's important to take care of yourself and each other. You spend one third of your life in sheets. Don't you want them to be insanely comfortable? So put comfort first, like with new bedding, loungewear, towels, and more. Kinda Funny loves Brooklinen. Tim says it keeps him comfortable and he's able to get the right colors that match with his room. Brooklinen products help you find the comfort in the little things, morning routines, extra soft sheets, plush towels, comfortable loungewear, etc. It's hard to imagine a summer stuck inside the house, but if you have to do it to keep everyone safe, I want it to be as insanely comfortable as possible. That's where Brooklinen comes in. Brooklinen's Memorial Day event is going on now, and you don't want to miss out on all the big savings, including the newest hammam and linen collections. But if you can't wait, get 10% off your first order and free shipping with the promo code GAMES only at brooklinen.com. Brooklinen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. We're also brought to you by ExpressVPN. Being stuck at home these days, you probably don't think much about internet privacy on your own home network. Fire up incognito mode on your browser, no one can see what you're doing, right? Wrong. Even in incognito mode, your online activity can still be traced. Even if you clear your browsing history, your internet service provider can still see every single website you've ever visited. Think about that. That's why even when you're at home, my God, that's why even when you're
listening to Benny Benassi Satisfaction.
Oh no. Now they can see that I'm watching the Blurred Lines video. That's why even when you're at home, you should never go online without using ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN makes sure your internet service provider can't see what sites you visit. Instead, your internet connection is rerouted through ExpressVPN's secure servers. Each ExpressVPN server has an IP address that's shared among thousands of users. That means everything you do is anonymized and can't be traced back to you. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your data with best-in-class encryption, so your information is always protected. Use the internet with confidence from your computer, tablet, or smartphone. ExpressVPN has you covered on every device. Simply tap one button and you're protected. ExpressVPN is the fastest and most trusted VPN on the market. It's rated number one by CNET, Wired, The Verge, and countless more. So protect your online activity today with the VPN that you should trust to secure your privacy. Visit our special link at expressvpn.com/games, and you can get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/games. expressvpn.com/games to learn more. Greg.
Hey, buddy.
Sub-023 writes into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can, and says, "What's up, KFGD crew? With EA Play coming up on June 11th, it got me thinking, what if EA's unannounced sports game is a new Fight Night game? Fans have been craving a new one since Fight Night Champions almost 10 years ago. One of my favorite memories was..."
Really?
Yeah, no, that sounds insane, but I think it lines up. One of my favorite memories was playing Fight Night Round 3 at Walmart, showing off the Xbox 360 graphics, and I feel with the excitement of the new consoles, it might be a good time to bring it back. Love what you guys are doing. Keep up the good work. Sidebar, I remember playing Fight Night Round 3 on my PS2 because I didn't have a next-gen console when it came out, and the thing that they really like made a feature on the PS2 version of that game was like the sweat graphics. Like every punch, it looked like sweat and spit would just like fly off each of the characters with every punch. It looked incredible.
That's crazy. That I you know, so my history with Fight Night is did not ever give a shit about it. Then when I was at IGN in Fight Night Round 4 came out in 2009 when we were still at the old office, and Dunham is still huge into boxing, and so it was a huge deal for Fight Night Round 4, and we did like an inner office tournament and all this stuff, and I remember like, awesome, I got my copy and I was like, I'm gonna get good for this turn. I was garbage, like, you know what I mean, like, not understanding the sport of boxing, I was just terrible at the game as well, so I just never paid attention since then.
I remember the Fight Night, I believe it was Fight Night Champions, where for me and my friend group who we all just love fighting games in general, there was a demo for Fight Night Champion that we got obsessed with, because I believe the two characters that were highlighted were Muhammad Ali and Mike Tyson.
That's round four. That's Fight Night round four. They're on the cover.
Oh, was that round four? That
round
was
four Ali and Tyson on the cover, yeah.
Okay, then that it was that one that we definitely got obsessed with then for the demo, and we would just go back and forth in that all day. But yeah, Fight Night Champions 10 years ago. Greg, what's your take? Do you think that
9 years. This could possibly... He's playing fast.
Not 9 years?
No, I don't see it happening. You know what I mean? Like, I don't... I even then I thought it was weird that boxing games had this like lineage that were going right. And it, here's the thing, I like to admit what I don't know right away. Like, I don't follow boxing and I don't follow UFC, but I would say that like it really feels like to me in kindoffunny.com/you're wrong that like UFC really came in and ate up the mindshare on like watching competitive fighting. Like, I don't. And granted, it's weird, very weird right now because of COVID or everything else. But I feel like for the younger generation, it seems like everyone's always talking about UFC. And I never hear boxing outside of, Max from ESPN and then the occasional huge fight with like Floyd Money Mayweather, right? Like, and Conor McGregor, right? Who also does, one of them also does MMA. But anyways, I just don't hear about it. And so I don't think that, as a casual, I'm looking in on this thing that there's a ravenous market for a fight night game. You know what I mean? A blessing. I'm not gonna lie to you. You know, since the work from home thing gives me all these screens in front of me, I do have the chat rolling over here. And my favorite one is the blind man over here who says, "Let's be honest, mate. If there's no skate, there won't be a fight night." Which, while there's a funny line, is also I think really true that like if you hear people wanting another skate, right? I made a joke about it last year at EA Play at the end of the show and got a lot of people pissed off at me. Like, there's actually a ravenous audience for that EA is looking at and going like, "No, we're not doing that." Where's Road Rash? Give me fucking Road Rash before you give me fighting.
So weirdly enough, I'm actually like very big into the MMA and UFC games. Like around that same time, me and the same friend group were also obsessed with UFC Undisputed 2, which I believe had the demo. And then I ended up like falling in deep into that rabbit hole of UFC games. And I honestly think the thing for Fight Night is that I think it's exactly what you're saying. Plus the fact that EA now publishes UFC games, and I think both those games kind of compete with each other, even though they're different. I think similar audiences are going to be vying for those games, are going to be interested in those games. And so like EA Sports, they said Fight Night was what, 9 years ago?
Yeah, 2011.
2011. And then in 2010, October 2010, EA Sports put out EA Sports MMA. Right after that, when THQ went down, THQ lost the rights for Undisputed, which then gave the rights to EA, right? And then EA in 2014, I believe, came out with EA UFC. And since then, they've just been putting out EA UFC games. Like, there's been three so far, this generation of EA UFC games. I honestly think for EA, UFC is kind of taken over as far as, like, those types of games are concerned. And so, like, I could see a return of Fight Night for EA if they see loss of interest in the UFC games. Like, if they've realized that over the last three games we've seen a decline in sales, I think that's when you'd see them immediately switch and go, "Hey, let's put out Fight Night games and take a break from UFC for a while." Because, like, to what the question is saying, right? Like, there's definitely an audience there, but right now, like, the overall audience is kind of satiated with UFC in a way that right now, like, if there is some sort of dip with UFC at all, like, I think immediately you put out Fight Night and you see like you see a rise of interest in it.
Well, I have some news here from You're Wrong, all right? And they're related. But as you know, Jeff Grubb from VentureBeat/GamesBeat watches this show. And he also, of course, tries to leak dates for everything. And I've seen it. He's up there now trying to get around this PlayStation thing. He's like, "Well, I heard it might have been pushed. I don't know what you're up to, Grubb." But Grubb says in here, it's UFC, the game we're talking about. This EA is also working on its own golf game separate from 2K's PGA game.
Yeah.
That was my proof. Because, of course, obviously you're wrong. You could write and say you're the Pope, and I wouldn't know. However, we do know Jeff Grubb is watching because Jeff Grubb tweeted at 10:48 a.m. trying not to get angry at Blessing Jr. for saying Kerbal Space Program might be a mid-core game.
What would it be? Core?
It's hardcore. Like, it's a core game for sure. Like, I don't think you should play it because it's complicated as shit to try to make your rocket.
I know it's definitely like an inside, or not even an inside baseball. I know it's definitely like it's a hardcore video game, but in the way that they're talking about, I guess, casual, mid-core, core. I guess I was thinking about it the wrong way. Because I guess like in the way in which we talk about those things in general, yes, Kerbal Space Program is definitely a hardcore game. But in terms of like you're talking about sales and you're talking about like games that are defined by like I don't know.
For the record, Grubb gets me and you're wrong too. He's like, "There's no way the sports games are not core for 2K. NBA 2K is also one of the best. I'm sorry, NBA 2K is one of the best selling games of the year. But I think that you're right that NBA Playgrounds, an arcade wrestling game, could be mid core." So I'm half right, half wrong on that, according to Grubb.
I want to know what else is mid-core then.
Yeah,
for 2K. Grubb.
Get it, Grubb.
But yeah, that was going to be the other thing I point out is that for the other EA Sports game, like there is a chance that it's golf, right? Because this year is the first year for 2K, or what was it?
EA. Now we're talking about EA, right?
Yeah, but 2K has their first golf game coming out this year because they acquired. Yeah, I don't know if they acquired rights for it, but they're putting out a golf game. But yeah, I wonder if that means EA is still going to do a golf game, not and just right. not have it be Rory McIlroy or what their direction is with
2K
that.
But yeah, his trailer for a new golf game, PGA 2K 2021.
That's what it is, PGA. That's what I was thinking of. And so yeah, they have the rights to PGA. I wonder what that means for EA in their golf game.
Yep.
Greg, now it's time to squat up. Anakin JMT writes in with a very interesting one. Kevin, I'm going to need you to click the link that's in this squat up and show it to the people because this is going to require illustration. Oh. Anakin JMT writes in and says, "This isn't a squat up for me, but rather for a good cause. This past Sunday, Shad Gaspard was swept away by the riptides in Venice Beach, California. His last words were telling the lifeguards coming to rescue him to get his 10-year-old son first, who was also caught up. His body was recovered Wednesday morning. While Shad is most famous for his time in WWE as part of the tag team Crime Time, he also had a role acting, as he appeared in Birds of Prey, and most importantly for video games, was the mocap actor for, and body model for Kratos in God of War 2018, and one of the stunt doubles for Bane in Batman Enemy Within. Collarandelbowbrand.com has created a t-shirt in memoriam for Shad for his heroism, with 100% of the proceeds going to his family. You can go to @collarxelbow on Twitter for the direct link. If you're a wrestling fan or someone who loved God of War, please consider purchasing a shirt and supporting the family Shad left behind." I was going to read the link, but the link is really long, so I highly recommend going to @collarxelbow or collarandelbowbrand.com, see if you can search for the shirt. But yeah, like this was the thing that's been happening over the last few days, and it's been really interesting and mainly sad to kind of follow. 100%. Shad Gaspard is actually like somebody who I was a fan of when I was watching wrestling. So much so that in SmackDown versus Raw 2007, I remember creating him and JTG because Crime Time wasn't in the game. And so like it was one of those ones where I went online, went to one of the creator wrestler websites where people would cook up formulas on how to create different wrestlers. And yeah, like I remember making Shad Gaspard because I was such a big fan of Crime Time because I always thought their gimmick was hilarious, and I used to be in love with their theme music when they walked out to the ring. And so yeah, like very sad, extremely sad story if you've been keeping up with it. Again, like you know, they're on the beach, got swept away by riptides, and as the lifeguards were going to save them, Shad directed them to go for his son first, like save his son first, and then Shad ended up getting lost and they found him later on. Very sad story.
Indeed,
but
indeed.
If you want to support, there's a shirt for you to go and buy. Were you around for Crime Time? Were you watching wrestling when that was going on?
I was covering it more than I was watching it. So like that was it. I think Crime Time's main rise to there was during when I was still doing the wrestling games coverage for IGN, because I remember doing stuff with them but not like watching it. So it's like when I saw the images, like, oh, okay, I remember these guys, but I don't, when I was like hardcore watching it as a fan, they weren't part of it.
Yeah, weirdly, that was my era of when I was watching wrestling, which was like an interesting era because it was like 2007 to 2009, I think, was when I was watching. And yeah,
exactly,
like Crime Time,
right there.
Crime Time was like the big thing. And yeah, I also didn't realize until last week that he did mocap for Kratos.
Yeah, so. I was confused about that because I had seen that get thrown around, and then when I searched for it, I had seen an article that, or a Reddit thread that made it seem like it wasn't real. And it got revealed like right as we were about to do PS I Love You. And so I went to put it in and then pulled myself back because I didn't have the research on it and then paled it. So I'm very happy that you did this and that, of course, Anakin wrote in with it.
Yeah. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write in, let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong. Frankfurter writes in and says, "New deal of the day. I know there are a lot of these, but Humble Bundle has a new bundle for Bandai Namco games on PC. And some are really good games. $1 for Enslaved is well worth it," is what he's saying. And also he's saying this, he also says it's on PS Now, but yeah, go to humblebundle.com if you want to check out that Bandai Namco sale going on. Joji says, "They are also re-releasing the Scott Pilgrim movie in Dolby theaters and re-releasing it in 4K soon, so the game's release could coincide with that."
It could. It just doesn't see, and I'm not saying there's no possible reason. I'm just saying it's a weird tease if that's a real tease.
And then Nana Ball just writes in and says, no reason given for why Scott Pilgrim was pulled, but Scott Pilgrim creator Brian Lee O'Malley tweeted the following on August 10th, 2016. Quote, my number one goal in life is to get the Scott Pilgrim video game re-released. Give me time. End quote. This tweet has since been deleted.
See, now that's interesting. That makes it, that's an interesting correction in terms of more information for you.
And then Gary the Third points out, rightfully so, that PGA 2K21 is not 2K's first golf game. They also made The Golf Club 2019, which I didn't realize, but that's a good one to point out. Tomorrow's hosts go like this. It's Greg and Tim, back at it like a bad habit. And of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.